Welcome to Off Trail Learning. This is Blake Bowles. If you've listened to this podcast, you probably know that Not Back to School Camp played a huge role in my life. In 2006, I started working there as an advisor to teenage homeschoolers and unschoolers, and it totally transformed me. I thought, these teens are so cool to work with, I have to do this full time. And so in 2008, I started Unschool Adventures so I could work with these kinds of teenagers in the rest of the year, not just for a couple weeks at the end of each summer. We also did a previous interview with Grace Llewellyn, who's the founding director and current executive director of Not Back to School Camp, and that was a bit more about the history behind camp and the big picture. In this episode, I interview Matt Sanderson, who was a session director for two sessions of camp this year, and he was a director last year also. And we talk more about the nitty-gritty of Not Back to School Camp, the ins and outs, what the daily life is like for campers and for staffers like Matt. Whether you're thinking about joining this camp, you have a kid who's interested in it, or you're just curious about this little wild world of unschooling and this very specific summer camp that works with teenagers who don't go to school, you'll have a lot to gain from this episode. Now, without further ado, I bring you Matt Sanderson.
Blake Bowles.
Ooh, you nailed it. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Who are you? What role do you play in Not Back to School Camp?
Yes. So this year and last year, I have been the session director for both our Oregon Session 2, which is at Camp Myrtlewood, and our Vermont sessions of camp. I've also been an advisor the past couple years at our first session.
And what does it mean to be a session director? How is that different from just being the director of camp?
So I direct a specific session of camp. Grace Llewellyn is our executive director and founder, who you interviewed on a previous podcast. And so she still does a lot of like the overarching directorial tasks like hiring and updating documents and policies and also directs or has directed one session of camp the past few years.
And is Evan still the director for session one in Oregon?
Evan and Grace co-directed session one this past year.
Okay, good. We got the formalities out of the way. Yeah. For those who don't know much about Not Back to School Camp and can't be bothered to go listen to the previous interview with Grace, let's give them a little bit of a picture of what Not Back to School Camp is. So when you talk about this to people, How do you describe it? What's your elevator pitch?
Yes. So Not Back to School Camp is a summer camp for homeschoolers and unschoolers, I usually say, because people aren't as familiar with the term homeschooling or unschooling. They are familiar with the term homeschooling, where we gather 50 to 100 campers in one place, and the majority of the time is spent doing workshops of various types that are co-created by campers and staffers alike.
Not bad. How is Not Back to School Camp different from other summer camps? When you say summer camp, people yes. tend to think of a certain thing. So what makes camp different, our camp?
Yeah, so people think summer camp, they think like canoeing and archery and a structured experience for young people. Sometimes they think of like a lot of competition. There's like summer camps with like crowns for various things. Our camp is very different in that it is structured in that like we have a schedule and we have workshops that are being offered by both staff and campers alike. Anyone can write their name and their workshop on the schedule. And the majority of the time is spent like choosing a workshop to go to or not choosing a workshop to go to, which is a major difference between our camp and most camps, is that like most of the day campers could be doing whatever it is that they want to do. It's designed around unschooling and therefore like self-directed learning and education and choice are a big part of camp. We also have evening events that are also optional, but mostly attended by all of our campers, which kind of give the structure to camp around like having a common theme or experience or group identity. And there are a couple of other mandatory things, but they're fairly minimal and mostly designed to like help people connect with other folks within the camp environment and not designed to like give them a very specific experience that like camp does.
So pretty much you only have to show up for 2 check-ins a day with meetings, check-ins and group meetings, and then an advisee group each day.
Correct.
And really nothing else is mandatory.
Yes, there are a couple things during the first couple days that are mandatory that have to do with orienting people to various things. And people also are on work crews that are mandatory.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Those superhero teams. Nice branding.
Yes.
And so at other summer camps, I think there's often a lot of free choice between activities. But in my experience, you have to choose to do something. You can't just hang out in your cabin. You can't lie in the field and have a conversation. It's like lots of choices, but you must choose.
Yeah, and I think that's the major difference. And that's kind of a lot of what makes it special are the spontaneous things that people end up doing. I mean, the workshops are great too, but like the spontaneous conversations, the hikes, the random, you know, at Vermont, we have about 100 milk crates that just exist at camp and that are like endlessly being built into different shapes and formats. And that's like not a workshop. It's just something that happens all the time. And I think that's part of where the magic comes in at camp.
And you mentioned these optional evening activities, these things that most people attend. And I think you did a pretty good job of downplaying those because this is something I feel like when we talk about evening activities at summer camps, I think of, you know, a talent show with s'mores. Yeah. And there are talent shows not back to school camp, but there are these other activities. Can you tell me more about those without giving anything big away? Because I feel like this is really unique to not back to school camp.
Sure. And you said that I downplayed those, and I did a little bit because I would say like almost everyone attends almost all of them, but they are optional. And so there are definitely like there's a group of people that likes to skip like almost each one of these, except maybe closing ceremony that pretty much everyone comes to every year. There is a small group of people that choose not to go, and that it doesn't seem to affect their camp experience in a major negative way. The major evening events that we have one called Bonding Night, which is just like it's a bonding experience. There's a lot of hugging of people that you don't necessarily know very well, and there's a lot of receiving hugs in a way that feels just surprisingly personally connective. And a lot of people say that like camp doesn't start until after Bonding Night because you haven't experienced that connection with everyone here at camp, that group bonding activity. We have an event called Seeing Seen, which is like a personal sharing event in which campers are encouraged to share something with a group of campers, not the entire camp, but a group of campers that they might not normally share in everyday conversation. It gives everyone kind of a glimpse into the things that people don't, the things that don't get shared in traditional like light surface conversation. It allows the group to kind of get to know each other on a deeper level. We do have the talent shows, which are always fantastic, but we also have like specific talent show nights. So we have like talent shows, which are everything. And then we also have the art show, which is visual art, and the concert, which is like performing musicians performing original songs. And we also have movie nights where we have like user submitted films from the group. So we have a variety of talent shows for different talents. And then we also have like a prom, which is like a dance. And then we have a couple of wild card nights in our Oregon session, which is 2 weeks long and is our longest session. We have a couple of nights that are like something that we haven't necessarily pre-planned, but that feels like it will be the right thing for the particular group that is at camp this session. And those are always delightful events.
What was one of the wild card nights this year?
Yeah, it's hard to choose which one to talk about because they're both great. One of the wild card nights this year was, if you've ever seen the show Chopped, it's a show on, I think, Food Network, or I don't know, I don't have those channels, but it's a show in which chefs are given ingredients that are like fairly non-traditional and are given a short period of time to whip up a dish and then are judged by other professional chefs on the quality of their dish. And so we took some of our campers who are either culminating, which means it's their last year and they've gone through a specific process around like being intentional about camp, or for just whom that they're aging out of camp. We put them on two teams. We gave them a set of ingredients that included tahini, lemon juice, beets and or carrots, and there was one more ingredient, and we said, make a dessert in 30 minutes, and then we set everyone else around them, and so they were kind of on stage, and they each created a dessert. I was one of the judges. It was a fantastic event. Everyone enjoyed it. There was much cheering and sadness to the group that was not able to come up with a delicious dessert.
With tahini and beets? What was so hard? Yes.
Well, this is an aside and maybe just personal bias, but like it was beets and or carrots, and they both chose beets, which I think is a terrible choice. and our kitchen coordinator, Franny, actually created a dessert using the same ingredients. She chose to use carrots, and her dessert was delicious.
Nice pitch.
Yeah.
What was the other wild card night?
The other wild card night at Oregon 2 was karaoke / hike night. And so some of us took a hike up to Vista Point, which is it's up a small mountain, and it kind of opens up and gives you this incredible view of everything around you. We're in rural Oregon where there's not a whole lot of light pollution. And so we got up there and just saw like a tapestry of stars, you know, looking out forever in front of us. And, you know, we're able to see like the single car that was driving down the road, like, you know, ant size miniature below us, and just had this like kind of incredible experience of being up there at night. And then the rest of the group who weren't choosing to do the hike, well, some people were probably doing whatever they want, because again, it's non-mandatory, but a lot of the rest of the group were doing karaoke night in the lodge, which ended up lasting throughout the hike and then continued for like an hour after the group that went on the hike got back, because people were so into just like rocking out to some karaoke tunes. So that was definitely a highlight as well.
And neither of those were thought of or conceived of before the session started.
No. And they probably won't be done again, at least for several years. They're like, it's kind of fun because they are one-offs and usually not repeated. Like there's like this kind of culture of like, oh, like, you know, we were here when this legendary event took place. Mm-hmm. And like, everyone's like, oh, will we ever bring that back? And sometimes we do, but like it's pretty much like once a generation of campers that you'll see one of these events, which is kind of cool. There's like, mm-hmm. there's something new and novel every year.
Mm-hmm. So you just finished directing Vermont 2018.
Yes.
How do you feel today, Matt, just viscerally?
This is what I tell campers too. Campers like designed as a peak experience. Like everyone's kind of on for all of camp. And that's especially true of like the staff is like, we're just thinking a lot about a whole lot of things, how to support people, how to make sure that that everything is running smoothly and on time and people are fed and everything. But also just like trying to like behave like in a really sweet and nice way and like have like lots of connective conversations and it just like, it just takes a lot out of you. And so the thing that I tell campers in the last day is like, this is a peak experience. Don't try to make your life always like this, because you can't be around, you know, 70 to 150 people every day of your life and be like, you know, interacting in this way that is like pretty intense, where you're just constantly going from one thing to the next and learning all of these things and changing and growing. So don't like beat yourself up if your life gets slower when you get home. And so like, I'm in that moment where I'm just like taking a huge breath of relief, sleeping a whole lot last night, and, just like preparing myself to go back into like normal life, which is a little less exciting and fast moving, but definitely more relaxing. Hmm.
What are some of your favorite memories from this year at camp? Because you worked all three sessions of camp.
Yep.
And you directed Oregon Session 2 in Vermont. And so from any of those sessions, what really stands out this year?
Yeah, at Oregon, we had a couple of campers who are like touring musicians and they're like, you know, semi-professional. And we didn't know this going into camp. Like they didn't like write on their application, hey, we're professional musicians, probably because they have some humility around that fact. But on day six, when we had the talent show, so 6 days into camp, no one's heard them like sing or play their instruments. And they played three original songs that they had written, and they were just like incredible. They whipped out a mandolin solo, and were harmonizing, and, it was just awesome. It was like, whoa, like I had no idea. Like we had like, you know, this level of like skill and talent, in our midst. They got a standing ovation, which has never happened before. And it was just like, yeah, it was just this fantastic, event, that took place. At Vermont, like I said before, we always have the milk crates. And one of the things that happens every year is, it's tradition to try to stack a crate tower of like single milk crate on top of single milk crate on top of single milk crate. The record is 25 crates straight up and down. And it always involves like designing elaborate like contraptions, including like building towers around the tower so people can stand on to lift up the tower to put more blocks in there. And we spent an hour like formally trying to break the record of 25 this year. And there were two groups doing it of like 6 to 10 campers each, and they each hit 25 and then the tower fell over. We have some great slow-mo video of it, but it's just like kind of a delightful event and like totally unique to camp as far as I know. I feel like we should get the Guinness people out here to like check on our towers, yeah. But yeah, it's great every year, and it's just something that people enjoy.
I think there's a natural limit of 25 to the number of milk crates that can be stacked. It's just one of those laws of the universe.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think that's possible, and that's likely. We'll never break 25, no matter what, how much we try.
It's like folding a piece of paper more than 7 times. I think you can do it. So I want to know about the day-to-day life of the director, the session director of Not Back to School Camp. Like, what are you actually doing? I feel like this is this almost mythical position where you are looked to for guidance and inspiration and to be a calming presence at the group meetings each day, but also to be authoritative. Like if somebody is pushing the rules at camp, then you have to be the one who deals with that. Yep. If, you know, in the few and far between occasions where someone has to go home, you're the one who has to do that. And so what actually constitutes your life as the camp director?
Yeah, I would say the first thing I do every morning is I prep for the morning meeting that we're going to lead that day. And the morning meeting topics, there are some that like need to get hit like throughout the session of camp. Just like talking about like loneliness on the first couple days, and letting new campers know that they are not alone in experiencing loneliness because it's super common. And then talking about like, you know, towards the end of the session, talking about coming back as an older camper, because we do have a process for people to either become junior staffers or to continue to come to camp if they feel like there's something that they need to get out of it that would require them to come back as a 19-year-old. So there's like kind of basic like announcements that get made. And then most of what happens during the morning meeting is like somewhat spontaneous and specific to the session. And so just like recapping what I've learned in the past 24 hours and what, you know, might need to be said, some course corrections, like culturally that we need to like work on, are we exploring offsite in a way that's like annoying the site staff, you know, is like an announcement that I might make to everybody. And so just getting prepared for that meeting. We always open with a quote for the morning and evening meetings. So getting prepared with that. And we also have like a song at every morning meeting. So checking in with the leader of the song and making sure that we're all set for that. And then I'll like eat breakfast and do the thing. And then like my morning is like, just thinking about like basically if there are anything that needs to be addressed, with an individual, sometimes I'll just do like a follow-up, just like out of concern to see how somebody's doing. Sometimes, like you mentioned, there will be some kind of disciplinary situation where somebody needs to like be told that what they're doing isn't working for someone else, or what they're doing isn't working for camp. And so thinking about how to deal with all of those things is how I like spend my morning and my afternoon. And also like most days, there's a fair amount of just like trying to hang out and connect with campers. Like a goal of mine every day is to like sit down with each individual camper and like learn something about them and try to have a brief connective conversation, because I want to have a connection with every single camper that's at a specific site of camp. One, because like they're interesting people generally, and I want to get to know them. And I think that that's like what camp is all about for me and a lot of the staff, is like getting to know and make connections with all these wonderful campers that we have. And then two, because if I do need to have a conversation, either like that's a disciplinary conversation where somebody's doing the wrong thing and I need to like talk to them about that, or like a supportive conversation where somebody is like having a hard time in some way or needs some help. Like I like to be able to have some like social currency with that camper already, because I have developed some relationship and some trust with them. And so, so I try to make time for like camper conversations. And then we have our evening meeting. We have, before our evening meeting, we have a staff meeting every day over dinner, in which we talk about what's going on. We get the perspectives from all of the staffers, and kind of get like a whole view of camp, with everyone's input. And we talk about any campers that need some support from us or anything that like we're worried about as a staff, and kind of like that, like sets my agenda for the next day is what happens at that staff meeting or what I hear. And also part of it is like supporting staff too, because, our staff have an intense and tough job. Sometimes it's also a really joyful and fun job. But like supporting each other is a big part of that meeting too. And then we've got the evening meeting, evening event. I'm usually not in charge of running a whole lot of things during camp in terms of like events and stuff, because we have camper committees and other staff involved. And so a lot of it is just like showing up and like being visible as like part of like the community, just like everyone else.
What time do you usually go to bed?
It varies widely. I tried to get to bed before midnight almost every night of this year's camp. So we had a season of camp that spanned probably something like 28 or 30 days. And I went to bed before midnight on about 25 of those days. I went to bed like between midnight and one, on like a couple of those days. And then I think 2 days I stayed up past 2 a.m., mostly like last nights of camp, and just like dealing with something one day, this session of camp. But traditionally I try to get to bed before midnight, and sometimes I'll go to bed as early as like 10, which is wonderful.
Ooh, that sounds like a dream.
Yes.
And when are you getting up? When does your day start?
I usually get up. We have wake up calls at 9 for the campers. And so, and that's optional again, like most things. But breakfast is at 9:30 for the campers, so most of them get up. And I try to get up around 8:30, or 8 if I know that like I need to prepare something for the agenda the next day that's going to take me some time. Mostly because I want to beat the rush to like the showers, and just have a little bit of a jump on the day.
12 to 8, that's a full night's sleep. This sounds pretty posh, Matt.
Yes. No, it's wonderful. It's
How many campers are commanded to give you foot rubs each day? How big is the team?
It depends on the session and the quality of foot rubs, but I usually demand at least 3.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable minimum for foot massage. Moving along quickly, of all these different things that you do at camp, what do you find the most personally rewarding, and which is the most, I don't know, draining or challenging or the least sexy part of your job? And let's just talk about while you're at camp, not pre-camp or after-camp stuff.
Yeah. Personally rewarding. I mean, this is going to sound cheesy, but just like we had a camper who on the last day of camp, she's like getting her stuff. This is Vermont. So this happened like 3 days ago. She's getting her stuff up from down at, down at the cabin, and she's walking with her mom, and she comes up to me and she's like, "This was like the best week of my life." And she said that in front of me. She said that in front of her mom. It was just like, I mean, just like that kind of feedback of like, wow, like this was like life-changingly amazing for me, is really rewarding for sure. And we also have like, you know, people regularly say like, oh, like I got a new perspective from camp, or like, oh, this was really like I've never like been able to talk about something that I'm talking about at camp. So that kind of thing is definitely super rewarding. It's also like really rewarding to see campers come back on staff several years later. We have a lot of, like most of our staff is comprised of former campers. And so just to continue those relationships and see them grow is really rewarding for me personally. As far as like tough or draining, I think dealing with like disciplinary issues is super draining. I had to ask a couple of campers to leave at one of the sessions that I directed in a previous year, and that's always tough. It's never like, yeah, it's never fun to send somebody home. It's never fun to have those conversations. So that's definitely the most draining.
Who are the kids who show up at Not Back to School Camp? I'm wondering how you respond to this question, because I often do. But, you know, what is the demographic that we serve at Not Back to School Camp?
It is definitely a mix. We have a wide variety of socioeconomic status. We have like definitely like a solid crew of people that like that are very well off. We definitely have a solid crew of people for whom it's a real struggle to pay for camp. And we do offer like work trades, and we offer scholarships for people of color, which is something that's new for us this year. So we have a wide range of socioeconomic status. We also have a major component of our camp community are like part of the LGBT community. We have a lot of like gender non-binary and trans campers, as well as like lots of gay and lesbian campers. We've been a mostly white community for most of our years, and that's something that we've been actively working on in the past couple of years through like creating diversity scholarships, but also trying to bring more people of color onto our staff in a variety of ways. So that those percentages are coming higher. We had about 20% people of color at our Vermont session, which is our most diverse session, which tells you that, like, you know, we've been mostly white for a while. And so that's something that we're working on. I don't know. What other demographics are
there? No, that's a really great response. Yeah. That was very comprehensive. Well done.
Thank you.
Going a little bit deeper, why do they come to camp? Like, what is the thing that is unmet or unsolved in their life that motivates them to spend the time and money and go through the kind of uncomfortable process of, you know, thrusting yourself into this group of totally new people, you know, going to an outdoorsy campsite, especially Vermont, where my memory is that everything is 90 degree wooden angles.
Yep.
and sometimes it's cold there.
Yeah.
And so what's the main motivation for campers in your experience? Why do they show up?
Yeah, well, let me just say, the thing that I get asked the most by non-homeschooler, unschooler types is, or even just like people imply, like I'm like, I work at a summer camp for homeschoolers. And they're like, oh yeah, to socialize them? That sounds great. That sounds like something that's super needed. And that is, I don't think the case for most of our campers. I think it is the case for some of them. But like a lot of them come from like spaces in which they're already like socialized. So I'd say that's a small percentage of our campers that are looking for like, socialization, in general, I think is a small percentage of our campers. Socializing and getting to know our particular group of campers, is a bigger motivation. A lot of people come, like most of the people that come to camp come because they were personally invited by another camper or a staffer, but usually another camper. And the thing that I hear is just that they heard that it was like an impactful experience for other people, or that the community was really strong and that they wanted to be a part of that kind of community. And I don't really know beyond that. That's what I hear.
I've heard similar responses, and also that you can't find a group of people like this anywhere else. That it is truly unique, because it is kind of a weird niche world, right? Teenage unschoolers, or, you know, highly alternative school students, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, where else are you going to find people like this? On the internet, but, you know, Skype connections are only surface level, unfortunately. And it's, is there anything else? Okay, I'm realizing I'm now leading myself into a self-promotional direction here.
Okay.
But like, you grew up, Matt, we should talk about you. You grew up going through a non-traditional high school environment. And so tell me about that just a little bit, and tell me about what you think, where else you can find a community like Not Back to School Camp.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So I went to a Democratic school where there were classes offered, but nothing was mandatory, basically. And there was a lot of age mixing. We were K through 12. So that was a pretty positive experience. That school no longer exists. But shout out to Upatinas, anyone who remembers, rest in peace. It was a great experience for me in my last 3 years of high school. Blake Bowles offers interesting and tremendous trips for unschoolers. And I've actually led a couple of, or I've been a leader on a couple of trips, and I've led one solo through your company, Unschool Adventures. And then I think, like, you know, there are a lot of, like, it seems like there's kind of a revival of, like, agile learning centers and Sudbury model schools. Maybe I only think there's a revival because two of them have been founded in Philly in the last, like, 7 or 8 years. There's a free school in Philly, which is a Sudbury model school, and an agile learning center. And I think those are really great resources. I also think, like, homeschooling groups are great resources. And Grace Llewellyn is starting a homeschool resource center as well in Eugene. Shout out to the Hive, check it out. So I think there are a number of these kind of resources for homeschoolers and unschoolers. And I think that camp is a slightly different animal in that, like, those are mostly set up to be, like, a long-term, like, community that you can be a part of, and camp is meant to be this, like, experience that, like, it is being part of a community, but it's also, like, getting really into, like, the midst of what it means to be part of a community, like, intense amounts of, like, community time and community bonding and just, like, sharing and being vulnerable in this really quick way that happens over 8 days to 2 weeks. And I think that, like, that particular thing where you, like, just get kind of blasted into community at an accelerated rate is not something that necessarily, maybe in the Unschool Adventures trips, because those are also, like, kind of brief experiences, but the other, like, resources are more, like, long-term, and so they don't, like, do that, like, accelerated community building thing that camp does that I think is really valuable for people, and that I think is why, like, is why camp feels like such a, like, unique experience, because, like, you come home from camp and you're kind of like, whoa, what just happened? Like, I feel so connected to this entire community that I really just barely met. Like, it was 8 days ago. It wasn't very long ago. And people feel like they've made, like, these connections that are going to serve them for many years to come.
Again, well said. You've been doing this for a while, Matt. What about those teenagers who feel really intimidated by the idea of being thrown into, you know, the deep end in terms of community and socializing, and they, you know, are kind of happy being a little bit more of a homebody, but they crave new connections. And so they're wavering. They're thinking, is this Not Back to School Camp the kind of place for me? Am I going to be overwhelmed and just want to go home? Yeah. Like, I know that you deal with this. And so what have you seen, and how do campers deal with this?
Well, I'll say this. You will feel overwhelmed and want to go home in the first couple of days. Maybe not everybody, but most people do. Like, that's part of camp, is, like, we talk to a lot of campers, even returning campers, who in the first couple days at some point feel homesick or feel like, ooh, I might want to go home. And I actually talk with every camper when I'm directing a session who, like, expresses an interest in going home. And if they want to go home, they go home. We do have occasional campers that just choose to go home, like, you know, one or two a season choose to go home. And also the vast, vast majority of campers who go through that period of, like, thinking, hey, I want to go home, and end up staying at the end of the week, they say, wow, like, I'm so glad that I stayed. So I will say, like, just like by the circumstance of putting yourself in a position where you're going to be in a communal living space, you're going to be sleeping in a communal dorm space, you're going to be interacting with all these people, there's not going to be as much privacy as home, like it's going to be uncomfortable for most people, adults, teenagers, anyone, especially if you're kind of a homebody who like hasn't done that thing a whole lot where you get out into the world. And also like besides those circumstances, which like most people get used to fairly quickly, they take a couple days, you're not going to be forced into doing anything that you don't want to do. Like that's something that is really important about camp is that like we don't force anything. Like I said, like almost everything is optional. And if you don't want to do any particular thing, there's usually a group, a small group of people who probably are the people that you're going to connect with anyways, because they feel the same way as you, where they're like a little bit reticent or a little unsure yet that they want to like throw themselves into, some of these evening events, that can be intense. And yeah, I mean, I just say that is a totally valid way to go through camp. And we support that, and you'll be supported by the staff in making those choices for yourself and by the other campers, who are also making those choices. And so, there's not a whole lot of like mandatory community building. It just kind of happens because there's not a whole lot of judgment about choices that you're making. And there are going to be other people that are going to be making the same choices as you. And so, so you'll have support around that. And in that you'll have community building. So everybody wins, right?
Yeah. I think that the popular image of summer camps in our culture, can make a young person feel like they're going to be forced into socializing or playing these awkward games with everyone else. And you know, that does happen at the very first opening circle where we play a few very brief icebreaker type games, but then it's over within about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And after that, there are no other games or getting to know you activities, or you have to have this conversation with someone that's required. That hasn't changed, right?
Right. There's lots of optional stuff that ranges from like silly to like seriously conversing about things. But there's nothing else that's going to be mandatory other than like everyone's going to be part of an advisory group with 10 or so people. And and sometimes those advisory groups will do things like play games or but those advisory groups are, again, they're a small group, and your advisors, part of their job is to like kind of take the temperature of the group and see what works for people and what doesn't work for people. And even in advisory group, often, you know, like if we're playing a silly game on one of the days of camp and there's a couple people that want to sit out and not play the game and just observe, like that's totally fine. And again, you're not going to be judged for that. You're not going to be forced to participate in something that you don't want to do.
Unless you're in Nathan Lester's advisory group, in which case... good luck to you.
Nathan Lester doesn't really play the silly games. Nathan Lester's advisory group more or less talks about themselves for most of the time.
You're right. Otherwise, he would force them into playing games. Yeah. Shout out to Nathan Lester, former podcast guest. How does the staff at Not Back to School Camp differ from other summer camp staff?
Yeah, it differs pretty dramatically, at least in my opinion. I don't know if there are other there are other summer camps that do their staff this way. If there are, they must be few and far between because it requires a lot of effort and devotion on the part of the staff. And what I mean by that is that like my experience with summer camps is that mostly there's like a director, and maybe one or two other like higher ups that have like been around for a while. And then most of the staff is like whoever's home from like college break, whoever recently like graduated from the camp or aged out of the camp. And our staff, is at least 50% of most sessions have like staff that have been around for like 6+ years. And we have many, many staffers that have been around for like 10 plus years of camp. And that just, I think, creates like a continuity and like a level of experience and expertise when like thinking about how to support campers or like leading games for campers or leading events or just like just all things that camp does, like, are done by this group of people that, like, has been doing this for many, many years, and are getting a lot out of it ourselves, which is why we keep coming back. Our staffers, like, yeah, they're just experts in ways that, like, most summer camp staffers aren't, and therefore, like, are able to, like, deal with situations and, like, make connections that I think other summer camp staff could not. And that's not everybody on staff. We always have junior staffers who are usually recently campers themselves, and we always are looking to hire, like, a next kind of group of staffers. And so for my first few years, there was I started when I was 20, and there were a number of staffers that were, like, roughly my age that came for many, many years. And, like, our average age, like, went up. And then, you know, recently we've brought in, like, a whole bunch of, like, young 20-ish year old staff that are kind of, like, the next kind of generation of staff that have now been coming for 2 or 3 years and are still, like, in their early 20s. I'm 30 right now, just if you don't know. And we always have staff that are also, like, you know, like, I can't remember the last session that we didn't have somebody who was 40 plus or 50 plus years old, at least one person, usually a couple people. And so we have a really wide age range of staff. And, like, the majority of our staff are, like, people that are, like, if they went to college, they're in their post-college years, just have a lot of knowledge about camp and the way that it runs.
So, in summary, a diversity of staff, including diversity of ages, and a lot of experience. Staff mm-hmm. who have come back year after year, not just a rotating cast of college students.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're making me realize what enables that at camp is the fact that you're only committing to 1 week or 2 weeks at a time. And the same, a lot of people say, like, oh, you're staffing at Not Back to School Camp, so you're going to be in Vermont. And I'm like, no, I'm just working one Oregon session this mm-hmm. year. The staff is often completely different.
Yes.
Between sessions.
Yeah.
And so I know for me personally, the fact that I've only had to commit to working 1 or 2 weeks each year has made it possible for me to come back and work year after year in a way that working a full, you know, 9 to 10 week summer camp season was no longer possible after my mid-20s, because I wanted to have that time free to do other stuff. I still wanted to be connected to the internet. It was harder to be in a totally all-inclusive summer camp environment for so long.
Yes, that's definitely the case. And also, like, there is the staff pay for people that have been around for a long time is better than a traditional summer camp would pay its staffers. And that helps people to, like, make it worthwhile financially to, like, take some time off work. I just think that the community of staff members of Not Back to School Camp is really strong. And it is one of the things that every single year we get feedback from campers that they label as, like, one of the best and most essential aspects of camp is the staff, and, like, the way that, like, the staff feel like a community and staff feel very approachable. And that's true, like, amongst the staff as well. Like, we feel very much like a community that is ever changing, but also, like, has kind of a cohesive culture and identity that feels really positive.
Yeah, agreed. You are one of those people who show up for pretty much every session, Matt.
Like, yes.
You have a fairly consistent track record of working all sessions of camp. And how long have you been working at camp?
Yeah, so I started camp in 2008. I was hired as a junior staffer at the first session of the year that week, which was Oregon session one. And I volunteered for the next couple sessions because I was pretty inspired and interested in continuing on as a staff member at camp. And I also thought that perhaps that would endear me to those who were doing the hiring in the next year and allow me to, like, come back as a senior staffer the following year, which it did. And I have not missed a session since then. So this is 11 years of going to every session of camp.
Oh my gosh. Well done.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. I thought you must have missed one session in there.
I have not missed a session at this point.
Flawless. Yeah. Flawless victory. So what was your role your first year or many years at camp?
Yeah, so my first year at camp, I was the logistics junior staffer, which is someone who reports to the position that we call the logistics goddess. And a big part of my role was keeping everything running on time, so ringing the bells at the correct time so that everyone knew that the next workshop was beginning. And then also just like doing all of the little things that that help camp to run, like putting up signs that say no shoes in this place, or making sure that like items appear in the right place for the next event that needs those particular items. And yeah, just basically being like a support person for the rest of the staff when it comes to like the physical space around camp.
And then you quickly upgraded to logistics goddess.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was my primary role for, so between logistics, junior staffer and logistics goddess, those were my primary roles for my first 9 years on staff. But I also took on some auxiliary roles. I've been an advisor, meaning leading like a small group of campers, in a daily, thing, which might be games or hanging out or talking or whatever, but it's leading a small group and kind of being their advocate and looking out for like that particular group of 10 to 13 campers, and thinking about them specifically. I've also been, the dish person at camp. I've like done all the dishes / coordinated people doing the dishes. I've been the night owl, which is the person that stays up late and makes sure, because we don't have a bedtime either. We have a person who stays up late and makes sure that everyone's doing okay, and also like closes down the buildings at a certain time. I have been the health person at staff or at camp, which is a new role for me this year. At our first session, I did health stuff, handing out meds, etc.
Maybe the question I need to be asking is, what have you not done at camp? Have you been in the kitchen? Have you cooked?
I have never cooked at camp.
Okay. New frontiers.
Yeah.
Anything else? What other roles are left?
I think that's it. I think I just haven't cooked.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll see you in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Great. I want to wrap this up, and I want to ask, in your long time, your 11 years of working every single session of camp, how have you seen Not Back to School Camp evolve, both in terms of camper culture, maybe things that are done on staff, new activities or policies that have been introduced? When you think back to 2008, when you started, and now, what stands out?
Yeah, so major changes. In 2008, we probably had some campers that like had come out as gay or lesbian. I'm sure we did. But we didn't have any trans campers or gender non-binary campers. So that's something that we, did a lot of work around, creating a comfortable situation for them, including creating non-gendered cabins that people could choose to sleep in. And building infrastructure around, we have a pronouns list on the wall, and we ask people their pronouns regularly, and we have a discussion group for gender non-binary folks or trans folks people who identify as genderqueer as an overall umbrella term for them, as well as inviting trans folks to participate in discussion groups that we have, men's groups and women's groups. We invite trans men and trans women into those discussions now. Now we have a big population of genderqueer kids. Also just thinking about sexuality and the way that it expresses itself at camp. That was one thing that we noticed, a lot of negative cultural messages that are present in movies and television, et cetera. We're invading camp culture as well. So we created a panel, a staff healthy relationships and sexuality panel, which we run at every session, which is totally optional, but it's, the staff not trying to be professional sexologists or knowing the exact percentage of each birth control method, but, talking about things that have happened in their lives around healthy relationships and sexuality that either went really well because they had really positive guidance from the people around them, or like went poorly in a way that like they wished that they had gotten better guidance or advice around sex and relationships from an adult, maybe, that they didn't have, and what they would have told themselves. And it's also an opportunity for our campers to ask any questions that they might have about healthy relationships and sexuality. And so that's been really positive in terms of our culture and kind of the thing that we are hoping to push in the next couple of years and have been working on for the past couple of years is trying to become more racially inclusive, including like incentivizing people of color to join our staff by like eliminating some of the lower tiers of pay that would typically be what you would be paid in your first year of camp, specifically for people of color who are coming onto our staff, and creating scholarships that are only available to people of color to come to camp if they have a financial situation that wouldn't allow them otherwise to come to camp, to make that possible specifically for campers of color. And we have a couple of other things in place, including like a person of color liaison as a staff role, like somebody specifically to talk to if you're having issues around your racial identity at camp and you want to talk to someone else who isn't white about those issues. That's a position that we've had for the first time ever at our second session of Oregon this year and at a Vermont session, and that created a really like comfortable and safe space for the people of color that we did have at camp. Yeah, those are like kind of some of the major changes that have taken place, a lot about like, basically about identities and about sexuality, are things that we think a whole lot about because those are things that I think teenagers are thinking a whole lot about, and that it's really useful to like have like a safe place to talk about all those things with adults who care and are like well-versed on those kinds of issues. And so like, being intentional about identity stuff has been a major change in camp. I would say the biggest change, if I had to sum it up in like one topic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For all the campers out there listening who might know you already, here's a question, Matt. Yeah. What do you do in the rest of your life? Like, what begins now that Camp Matt has ended? And you, what are you doing for the next 10 months?
Yeah. Well, I just got married last May, and thank you. And my wife is a doctor. She just graduated from medical school, and so she is now a resident at Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati and Cincinnati Children's. She's doing a dual specialty called MedPeds, which is internal medicine for both adults and children. And so I now live in Cincinnati. All of a sudden, I'm from Philadelphia, I live actually just outside Cincinnati, and I am looking for a gig. And what I thought that would be is like something to do with working with youth in some way. In previous years, I've been a coordinator for a middle school program outside of Philadelphia that like ran weekend programs for middle school Quakers. So I thought I might look into something like that. But I actually found one of Helen's co-residents' fiancés is like a handyman slash like home remodeler. And so that is what I've been doing recently because it's been fun to like build some community with him. And I've been learning all these new skills that I never learned before, including like how to like move a wall if I don't like where a wall is in my house, or move an outlet, or tile the floor of a hotel, which is something that we did. And so I'm a little bit unsure what I'm going to be doing because I've been really enjoying this kind of work. I think it's useful to me and probably will continue to be useful to me as long as I live in a house, which I hope
which you hope continue. Will happen. I hope so too.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll live in a boat one year.
fair point.
It's a little bit unsure. What I do know is that like I will be looking to try to create some community around the things that I enjoy, which is a lot of like playing games and working with youth. And so I'll be looking for opportunities to get involved in the local community around those things. It's a little bit up in the air right now. We just moved here and we are just figuring it out.
For anyone who wants to learn more about Not Back to School Camp or get involved as a hamper or get involved as a staff, can you tell them where to go and when to go and make these investigations?
Yes. Our website is nbtsc.org, and we will start hiring. I believe the best way to get on staff is to click on the links through our website. There's like a join link. And basically you'll end up emailing Grace Llewellyn, who will then ask you about it. If you do choose to email her, please like include why you think you would be a good member of our staff. We do get emails from people that are just like, I'm an adult, you would want me, right? And like, that's not necessarily the case, because we do have like a pretty highly qualified staff, which is not to say that you shouldn't apply, because we always love new staff members. But if you are applying, like, think of it like applying for any other job, and let us know like why you think you would be a positive member of our community and why you might be able to contribute. We have junior staff applications open mid-January and due by February 1st. And then our camper registration will open in February as well. There's an early registration deadline that'll save you $100 that I don't know off the top of my head, but it's like later in the year before summer. Maybe we should cut this and just you should tell us.
No, we're going to keep this. Get your act together in February or March to sign up for a session in August or September.
You put me on the spot.
Gosh, you nailed all the other ones, Matt. And all right. Just the early application deadline. It's okay. We'll trash this whole interview.
Great.
All right. Matt, thanks so much for taking the time.
Sure, no problem. Thanks, Blake.